This is URN.
The Sports Show Breakdown.
Welcome back to The Sports Show, and to begin things off, we are obviously going to talk about Formula One. Now, Lee, I know you are a massive Formula One fan, and coming up to the last race of the season, we're obviously going to be looking ahead to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix that happens this weekend. Now, obviously, Lewis Hamilton has already secured the championship title. Do you feel that there will be perhaps more respect between him and Nico Rosberg going into this race now that the both championships have gone to Mercedes, and of course Hamilton has secured the title? And do you feel that they should be left and free to race up against each other? Because I know David Coulthard has came out midweek and said, you know, he wants to see the Mercedes team allow their drivers to, you know, really compete against each other. What do you think?
No to the first question. I don't think there'll be any more respect between the drivers. And I think they will be allowed to race within reason until they seem like they might be jeopardising each other's chances to finish the race, which with Lewis Hamilton at the wheel is very much a possibility, because he will give as much as he gets when it comes to overtaking and battling on the track. So hopefully they'll be able to race. There's no reason why they won't be allowed at this point in the season. And I think it will show that the team have the faith in their drivers to go out and compete as they should be able to. And we need it, because Abu Dhabi always isn't the most exciting race, unfortunately. But hopefully they'll go out and compete, and fingers crossed Lewis will win.
I mean, to say Hamilton and Rosberg have had a fractious relationship over the past couple of years would be an understatement. I mean, you saw a couple of weeks ago when Hamilton won the championship, you saw Rosberg acting like a petulant kid, throwing the hat right back at Hamilton. But I think Rosberg has won the past couple of races, and maybe he's not feeling so downbeat, more optimistic going into next season, so the feud might have calmed down for the time being. But I'm sure unless one of them moves teams come March next year, the rival will be just as fierce as it's always been.
Now, obviously, you did touch on to a point that I had written down in my notes about Nico Rosberg throwing, of course, the hat back to Hamilton. Do you guys think that was the right thing to do, or do you think that is in some way, you know, giving the sport a bad name in terms of, you know, drivers, when they're not in their car, they do have a bit of, you know, they do build up. Obviously, not winning the championship is going to build up a head of steam, and, you know, you are going to get a bit frustrated. But do you think that there was perhaps a different way that he could have dealt with it? Do you think that he should have just put the hat on and, you know, just said, yeah, okay, so Hamilton's a better driver than me this season, but I'm going to come back harder next season?
I side with Nico Rosberg, to be fair. I think over this a long, hard slog of a season, it comes down to it. They're fighting to the very end. Nico Rosberg showed that he still had the passion to drive, and he was still upset to lose the title. Even everyone but him had realised it had gone to Hamilton. So, and you don't want to accept defeat. Throwing that hat back says, I'm not letting you take control. I'm not letting you dominate me. I'm coming back stronger next season. So I actually think Nico Rosberg did the right thing. I think it was slightly disrespectful of Lewis Hamilton. And I think that was Lewis Hamilton playing mind games, for sure. He's not an idiot. He knows what he's doing. He's been controlling the team this season. I think ever since the Spa incident where Rosberg collided into the back of Hamilton and put him out of the race, since then Hamilton has sort of played the good guy in the team and made him, given himself a better image to everyone on looking of the situation between them. So I think Nico Rosberg has realised he can no longer just sit there and take it, and he's got to give as hard as he's given.
I think it's easy to forget, and I can agree more with you, that these two were very good friends all the way from childhood, growing up, and they've always, you know, they're roughly the same age. They've always competed against each other. But I think you touched on Spa there, and the incident could have fueled on Hamilton, I believe, and that's shown in the evidence. He's won the past two championships, but maybe the throwing of the hat incident, although I think it has been blown out of proportion, could spur Rosberg. And when you've seen that I think there's only been a couple of races since he's definitely won at least a couple, certainly gained more points than Hamilton since he's won the championship. Yeah, you could argue that he's taken his foot off the gas, Hamilton, because, you know, he's won the championship. He didn't have to put in everything, but I'm sure that incident would have spurred Rosberg on, and I think we've seen early signs that it has.
Now, obviously, Ed, you're not as big a Formula One fan as a couple of people in the studio.
No,
but
no.
In terms of coming back next season, and, you know, not just in Formula One, but in any sport, in football, in tennis, in cricket or rugby or whatever, what do you think that Rosberg's mentality needs to be going into the new season? You know, knowing that he has been playing second fiddle to Lewis Hamilton for the last couple of years at Mercedes, what would be your mindset going into next season? How would you get yourself into the right frame of mind to come back even better next season?
I definitely agree with the lads when they've said that Lewis Hamilton's been having the mental edge over Rosberg, but I think he should come back next season, and he should be, with the throwing of the hat incident, he should look and say, right, I'm going to show you, I'm going to perform to my best next year and show you that I am the better driver. And I think if he goes in with a positive attitude that he focuses on his driving rather than his feud with Hamilton, I think that would be the correct way to go forward, and I think that's what will serve him best next season.
Moving on with the show now, we're going to be talking a little bit about the cricket, and of course England are currently playing Pakistan in the series over in the UAE. Unfortunately, they didn't win the Test match series that was going on, but they did manage to pull it back in the ODIs, and they are currently preparing for the T20 games that start in a couple of days. They got off to a great start in the warm-up game with Jason Roy hitting 59 runs against the UAE in a 92-1 first wicket partnership with Alex Hales, but only finished on 174 for 6, which was a bit disappointing, even though it was only a warm-up game. Now, I know a lot of you guys aren't really cricket fans, but I just wanted your opinion in terms of England. And, you know, they're not the best team in the short form of the game. Obviously, in Test matches, you know, they've proven themselves year in, year out against many various teams around the world. They are up there and, you know, considered to be one of the best teams in the world in terms of the long format. But what are you guys' opinions on the short format of the game and how they should, where they need to improve upon to, you know, be competing in T20 World Cups?
Well, since the disastrous ODI World Cup earlier on in the calendar year, there's been a huge revival. I mean, new coach, new captain, more attacking mindset. And I think with the T20 World Cup coming up in only about 4 months, the pressure on these next three 2020s over the next week are quite immense. And, you know, we actually won the T20 World Cup a few years back, so it's something we have history in. But I think in terms of the changes, yeah, I mean, we've ditched Alistair Cook, who was, you know, scoring at a pretty low strike rate. We've ditched some of the old guys and we've brought in a new, fresh, young team. And I think that going into these 2020s in the forthcoming World Cup, which is actually played in similar conditions to this, we have a real chance.
I mean, you talk about Alistair Cook, obviously the Test match captain, having quite a low stroke rate in the short format of the game. When you look at the likes of Alex Hales, who's got 171 runs in the four ODIs that we played against Pakistan at a rate of 85 per 100 balls. You've got Jason Roy at a rate of 90 per 100 balls. Owen Morgan at a rate of 79 per 100 balls. And James Taylor at a rate of 86 per 100 balls. And of course, Joe Root, who's ever the reliable batsman for England, at 86 runs per ball. But this Butler's display of 100 plus runs in the final game against Pakistan in Dubai last week means that his rate, average rate across the four games, was obviously 155 runs per 100 balls that he gets bowled at him. So, you know, things can only be looking up for England. But where do you guys think that... Do you feel that England have a strong enough bowling lineup to be dealing with the likes of Pakistan, and of course they do play up against South Africa later on this year, coming in the lead up to Christmas? Do you think that there is still room to improve, especially when you look at them playing in the UAE? You know, you've got such an extreme humidity in the climate over there. Do you think that will have an effect on how they perform against Pakistan in the short form of the game?
I mean, they've obviously ditched a couple of their premier fast bowlers in Anderson and Broad, but this is a relatively weak Pakistan batting lineup. You know, a lot of experience, but not that much talent. And the young guys such as Willie, Wokes, have come in and have done a terrific job. And obviously, in spin-friendly conditions, Rashid and Moeen Ali have done a relatively good holding job as well. So I think that the young, dynamic nature of England's bowlers, and the fact that there's all these different types of variations now that they're bowling, Reece Topley, who's about 10 foot tall, bowling as a fast bowler, bowling balls at about 50 miles an hour, you know, there's variations. It's very optimistic for the future, and I think we finally embrace kind of the new culture of ODI cricket.
Obviously, the ATP finals were happening in the last couple of weeks in London, in the O2 Arena, where the top eight players throughout the season were invited to play in a final tournament at the end of the season. And of course, Novak Djokovic did beat Roger Federer 6-3, 6-4 in just 80 minutes in the O2 Arena. He did also get beat by Roger Federer in the group stages of the final. So perhaps there was a bit of revenge there, but it does mean that Novak Djokovic does end the year with 11 titles, including 3 Grand Slams. He's obviously at the peak of his career, but is there anything that Novak Djokovic can't do at the moment?
No.
I can't win a French Open.
Well, that. But I think he is fantastic. We are in an era where we are spoiled by the quality of tennis players that we are seeing. We're seeing Nadal, Federer, Murray, Djokovic. And Djokovic, I think, is the... he's just that bit better than the others and has been for the last year or two. He's just got this never-die attitude. Every ball that comes his way, gets returned. If anyone can do a return and turn a rally around, turn a game around, you'd put your money on it being Novak Djokovic. And I think that there could be a year in the next couple of tennis seasons where he could do all four in one season of the Grand Slams.
I mean, he doesn't have the support and the grace of someone like Federer or the power of someone like Nadal, but you can't... it'd be difficult to argue there's ever been a fitter tennis player than Djokovic. I mean, his longevity is incredible. I mean, you said 11 titles and 3 slams. I mean, we saw Serena Williams recently hold all 4 slams. I mean, the fitness of these top tennis players is just amazing.
Now, obviously, you talk about Roger Federer. I think he's won about 17, 18 Grand Slams in the time in the span of his career. Now, he obviously did lose to Djokovic at the ATP Finals and also at Wimbledon and in the US Open earlier on in this season. But, Ed, what do you think about Federer? And obviously, like I said, he's getting on now. Do you think that he does have much left in the tank, or do you feel that it's coming up to the time for him to hang up his boots and perhaps turn to becoming a coach?
I certainly think that kind of he is over the hill, and is, whilst he is still definitely one of the top tennis players around, he's... On a gradual decline, and it's not, and it is gradual because he's still performing with the world's best. But I think the time is near, maybe 2 seasons, 3 seasons in advance, where he will, you know, finally hang up his racket, if that's possible to do, and you know, actually just go to a different aspect of tennis if he does that. But interestingly, he actually said with the, I'm sure we'll come on to it later with the Davis Cup, he did say that he's backing Britain for the Davis Cup primarily because of Andy Murray, so it would be interesting to see whether that's a management attitude.
Now, obviously, you talk about the Davis Cup, and that's exactly what we're going to be moving on to, bringing things a bit back closer to home. Now, I say closer to home, obviously it is being played over in Belgium. Now, there's been a lot of issues in terms of the terror attacks. You know, there's been a lot of speculation around whether the finals would be played, but it has been cleared to go ahead, and Andy Murray has been, of course, encouraging spectators to come along and watch the games. And do you guys feel that the terrorist attacks will have a negative impact on it, or do you feel that it's down to the fans and the players and everyone involved to, you know, to try and bring back hope to a country that has been rivaled with fear and obviously security protocols in the last couple of weeks?
I think undoubtedly it'll cast a cloud over it. I mean, it's not just throughout Belgium, it's throughout a lot of Western Europe, these fears are going on. But I mean, we haven't won a Davis Cup in I think over 70 years, so this is huge potential history in the making. I mean, they have a pretty strong team, Belgium, but certainly they don't have a player of Andy Murray's quality, and certainly Jamie Ward, Britain's number two, is arguably as good as their number one player. So although there is a huge cloud over the final, I am hugely optimistic that we can win the competition.
Now, obviously, Ed, you touched on it a bit earlier and about how obviously we do have Andy Murray, and Roger Federer was backing Andy Murray to lead Great Britain to a win in the Davis Cup, like Ben said, for the first time in 70 odd years. Now, it is being played on clay, and we do know that Andy Murray isn't the best on clay. Do you think that will have again, going back to the sort of mental impact of the game, do you think that will have a huge impact on the way that Andy Murray performs, or do you think that he'll want to prove his doubters wrong and come back to Great Britain with the Davis Cup title?
Murray's had mental kind of lapses because, as we said earlier with Djokovic, he's not got that steel mentality. But I do think that he is a maturing player, and that he will take this mature attitude. And I think he could, for the first time, surprise people and come back to Britain with the Davis Cup.
I mean, I totally agree with you. You know, I haven't really been keeping up to date with much of the tennis, but I do definitely think that Andy Murray does have a point to prove after a disappointing ATP Finals where he did get knocked out in the group stages. What do you think, Lee? Do you think that he'll have a lot of stuff on his mind, and do you think that he'll be able to shake that off and, you know, just go in there clean-headed, know that it's the end of the season and that he can come away from Belgium with the Davis Cup final and make history?
I think he'll be 100% confident. I mean, I don't believe Andy Murray has anything to prove whatsoever apart from to himself. I think Andy Murray had a great support system and a fantastic coach in Ivan Lendl, and that's when we saw Andy Murray at the peak of his powers. And since Ivan Lendl has left his side, he seems to have been struggling with the mental side of the game. And I think to someone like Andy Murray, who's such a determined, grafting type of person in his tennis, we've seen the progress he's made, that he'll want to overcome that himself and gain that mental attitude that he's had before, but without the support system that has been Ivan Lendl. So I don't think he's got anything to prove. I think he'll go to the Davis Cup 100% knowing if he plays as he can, because he is Andy Murray, who is a fantastic tennis player, Britain will win the Davis Cup.
This is URN.
The Sports Show Breakdown.